to this edition of the Hagmann Report. It is Tuesday. All right, thank you. It's Tuesday, November 28th, 2017. Tomorrow I'm going to be covering in my morning show some information that, I've been watching, and I think it's going to be breaking. That is the cover-up, the beginning and the end of the cover-up. There, Judicial Watch has hinted, Tom Fitton, head of Judicial Watch, is hinting around that there's explosive new Clinton Lynch tarmac documents. And of course, back on June 29th, 2016, the Obama Attorney General Loretta Lynch tried to convince us that that tarmac meeting, nothing to see here. It was just a private conversation. Now, Judicial Watch, of course, filed a Freedom of Information Act. They got nothing, and they took it to court. Now they're getting documents, of course, even under the Sessions Department of Justice, not fast enough, and certainly a lot of it being redacted. But there's, and even though some cynical people might say, nothing's going to happen anyway, at least the exposure is starting. It's an indictment, in my view, of the Freedom of Information Act, the effectiveness thereof. It's an indictment of that, but it's also a very uplifting thought to believe that the information is going to come out for all to be exposed. So tune in tomorrow to the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, AM, 9 to 10 Eastern on BTR and Global Star Radio Network. With that, Stan Dale, welcome to the program.
Good evening, sir. I hear Joe is still out a bit under the weather.
Yeah, he'll be back tomorrow, I'm sure. But yeah, he's still nursing his throat and flu-like issues. But he's coming back. He's doing better. So
this flu, I tell you what. Holly and I actually went and got our shots this year.
Okay.
Yeah, there's just so much of it around, and you know, being an older fellow, they said I was very prone to it. So, came with great big needles.
I'm a recluse. What I do is I just go between the studio and my home, and I keep everyone else out. So,
do you do any shopping at the Walmart or grocery store?
Oh, heck no. No. I've got lackeys for that. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No, actually, we send the flu resistant kids out for that. Oh, wait, right. Shows out. Yeah. Anyway,
but when the packages come back in, you know, even that could have, you know, germs on it. It's going to be difficult. That's kind of what made up our mind.
Well, you'd know this. How long? Okay, so if someone's got the flu, and I don't know, they sneeze on a package, and my wife and I happened to be talking about this the other day, and we were curious, or a plastic bag, you know, one of the grocery bags. How long does that last? Like, how long do the germs last on that?
Well, I guess it depends on the particular strain, on. You know, how long it lasts for, you know, how resilient it is, things like that. But usually, they'll survive on hard surfaces for about 24 hours.
Wow. Okay. Yuck.
Yeah.
All right, my grocery list, bleach. Okay, bleach, and let's see, what else?
And
biohazard
mask.
What do
you call it, Lysol spray? I mean, we have that in the car with us all the time.
That's right. The wipes and the spray and all that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the hand sanitizer. I'm a big believer in all of that. I've become a germaphobe of late. So, but yeah, I don't know what got my wife and I talking about that, but we were actually wondering, well, how long does it, you know,
I'd say that if you get past 6 hours, you're probably pretty good. There's some sources say that they might be 24 hours. They'll last, you know, that they'll survive. But at least 6 hours on the hard surfaces, on clothing, and on tissues, you know, like you blow your nose, maybe 30 to 45 minutes, they tend to dry out. And on the skin, if you get touched and it's on your skin, maybe 20 minutes and it'll die. But
it's still not good. Yeah. Okay. All right. Joke didn't land. All right, Stan, where do we start tonight? You've got so much going on, as we spoke about off-air. There's just all the...
Well,
wow.
You know, one thing that's been kind of on my mind and my still moments, which are few and far between at the moment because of this EMP shield business. But one of the things that's been bugging me is about potential identity of the Middle East Antichrist. Now, I know I've been pushing, you know, Mohammed bin Salman, but there's always been one little nagging thing in the back of my mind about him. You know, as far as MBS, you know, the Nostradamus type label for the third Antichrist, and that fits what they call this one, MBS, that is still from a source that's not biblical. That is from a guy who, you know, Nostradamus, who, you know, burned a candle and looked into, you know, a little pool of water, and he, you know, kind of, to me, he went to sources that weren't from the Lord, I think. So it doesn't mean that some of his forecasts, which can be kind of interpreted this way or that way, doesn't mean that they aren't correct, but they're from a not trustworthy source. And I'm thinking, did he put these clues in, or was he instructed to put these clues in his writings to throw people off at the end times? Because that's what Satan would want. Now, so I challenge my own thoughts all the time. And so I thought, all right, Scripture says that this Antichrist is going to be pushed on or you know, threatened by the king of the south. Well, what's south of Saudi Arabia that would be some major power in the Middle East? Nothing, really. I mean, you know, Egypt is kind of west of there, and south is kind of down into the Indian Ocean, you know, maybe a corner of northeast Africa, but that's it. And I thought, well, okay, there was one other guy that I have never, put up, or if I did, I took it down a long time ago, Qasem Soleimani, the Quds Force commander for Iran. Now, why would he fit the bill? Well, he is a natural-born Assyrian. You know, Syria, Iran, all that was part of ancient Assyria. And I looked up his birthplace. A little town with 240 people in it. Not a biggie. But it was one of these towns that make that their trade is to dig the wells that are called Qasems, Q-A-S-E-M. And his name is Qasem, Q-A-S-S-E-M, Soleimani. They make these wells to take water from one source to their city by using vertical wells down into a shaft that they dig that transfers water through coarse gravel and whatever, and it's a water supply system. Now, he worked, this Qasem Soleimani, he worked as a youth for the water company there in the little town he was from. And so he was trained in the movements of water and, you know, hydrostatics and how they all work. I know that it says the Antichrist is going to send out a flood, you know, after Israel in the end days. Maybe he will have that knowledge, I'm thinking. If he were the Antichrist in Iran and into Syria, where, of course, his forces are moved now, if he were the Antichrist, then pushing on him from the south would be Prince Mohammed bin Salman from Saudi Arabia. And he is doing that. He is pushing on Iran, you know, trying to stir up a war between the two of them, because from the south, you know, Mohammed bin Salman is representing a country that are Sunni, and they're going to try to wipe out the Shiites in Iran. So I may have to revise my thoughts on this and lean more toward Qasem Soleimani, because he's getting high praise from the Khomeini there about his efforts to bring peace in the Middle East, even though he has to use warfare to do it. He's a soft-spoken man. He's very smart. He's tactically brilliant. They call him the Rommel of the Middle East, you know, like the German General Rommel. This guy just knows how to move troops and tanks and armament and win battles. And he's moved, of course, into Iraq to fill the vacuum that we left when we went out of Iraq, and been setting up and supporting military structures and political structures that will help him. Now, he is surrounded by, oh, I don't know what, 40 Arab nations that are in a meeting, or may have finished by now. They were in a meeting with Mohammed bin Salman, who want to wipe out terrorism. And they've bonded together, and they've got their own military, which, you know, I do show, actually, if you go onto my show images page and click on image 43, it shows you how much power that Mohammed bin Salman has collected to march against Iran, the seat of terrorism. They're saying it's Iran who are the terrorists. Of course, Iran is saying the United States and Israel and Saudi Arabia, they are the ones who set up ISIS and, you know, made the terrorists of the world. So you can see that my concern or my conflict in there, in that there are so many signs that say that Mohammed bin Salman is a Solomon, like it says in Revelation 13 there. You know, if you go onto my show images page and scroll down probably almost to the bottom to image 14 right underneath that, Revelation 13, it says, "Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and that, and his number is 666. Now, I took that literally to mean that the answer to this riddle in Revelation 13:18 is in the Bible. And where in the Bible was 666, you know, to number a man? And that was King Solomon. So I knew that if that's the correct clue to us, and I've interpreted correctly, that we're going to have to be looking at someone whose name is a derivative of Solomon or Solomon. And so that could be Suleimani, Solomon, all those kind of variations in the Middle East and up as far as Turkey. Now, so I look at Qasem Soleimani, Solomon, and I look at Mohammed bin Salman. We've got two Solomons to choose from. And this has been kind of, you know, when I would have a spare moments, I said during the week, I'd think, right, which one? You know, okay, pushing on from the south, but who is the natural-born Assyrian? Well, I have to stretch it if I'm going to call Mohammed bin Salman a natural-born Assyrian, because Saudi Arabia down that, you know, where he was in Riyadh and almost all the way up to the Jordan, that was not part of ancient Assyria. So I'm now leaning back toward, you know, the Qasem Soleimani being the militant, successful Middle East Antichrist. He has military experience that's brilliant. In contrast, young Prince Mohammed bin Salman is youthful, he's impetuous, he's unskilled in military. He's, you know, he met a bit of a defeat in Yemen down there. He showed that he wasn't trained as well as he should be in field tactics. And let's face it, he's been living in the palace there with his dad in Riyadh, not being out in the field and fighting battles like General Qasem Soleimani. So that's kind of one of the things I wanted to bring to the forefront. If you look at slide 57 today, it shows the area of ancient Assyria, and in the northeast corner of it there is where Qasem Soleimani was born. And if you click on the text underneath that, it'll take you to an article about him in Wiki, and it'll tell you where he was born. You can look up the little town if you can find it. It's so tiny that it's called Kwanet E Melek, means like the head or chief water supply there in a little suburb called Kerman in Iran. You can look at that on the Wiki page underneath him and see that. So I'm just telling you that I'm being flexible and saying that, you know, to fit all the clues, we've got to have an Antichrist with a Solomon-type name that's skilled in military and is really revered by his troops, and he is everywhere, and is pushed on from the south by another strong power in the Middle East, and that would be, in this case, Saudi Arabia. And there are other clues to fit in there, too, but that's, I'm just telling people that so they can have a think about it. I'm going to be putting him back up on the page.
Yeah, you know what? You opened my mind to the possibility of an Islamic Antichrist. I mean, I understand where my big hang-up was, or is, and was, is the acceptance of the Antichrist by all peoples. And I had a hard time mentally thinking through an Islamic bloodline or Islamic I shouldn't say bloodline, but the possibility of an Islamic Antichrist. But you've got me rethinking that whole thought process.
Think about this when you say that. In the press, we're seeing that in Iran, they are hailing Qasem Soleimani as a hero because he has defeated ISIS, you know, IS over in the Middle East now. He's done that. Now, there's strong evidence that ISIS came from Saudi money, saying one of the Saud family members.
Undoubtedly. Yeah.
Okay, so if Soleimani's actions, and he continues with them, if he is able to dismantle ISIS and get rid of the terrorists that are presently on our doorstep, then even Americans would say, well, you know, he's not such a bad guy. He got rid of the terrorists, you know? And it's going to sway public opinion all across the world if he can bring peace over this terrorist stuff. Now, the other thing is, right now, Saudi Arabia's in a position with the White House and with Israel's leadership, and they are drafting a peace treaty. It's a quasi-peace treaty. And will Mohammed bin Salman or will Qasem Soleimani endorse that peace treaty? This, we've got to watch both of them, because this is happening in the press as we speak. Now, Qasem Soleimani is not the Khamenei of Iran, not the king of it. He's like a prince. He's number two. And if you look at Mohammed bin Salman, at the moment, he's number two as a prince. But this week, his dad is supposed to turn the reins of Saudi Arabian government over to him. Now, it has been mentioned in the press that King Salman will still be the head of government in title like Queen Elizabeth is, but he won't be running things. So does that mean that Mohammed bin Salman will still be a prince and still be a prince who ratifies the covenant between Israel and the many nations around him? We've got to throw these things around almost daily in our minds so that we can see the support for one position or another in the press, in the news. I tell you what, it's exciting getting up in the morning and turning on the news to see what the heck's happening. Of course, Holly's been there 4 hours before me, and she just kind of gives me a cliff notes of it right then, you know, say, hey, here's what's happening today, blah, 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 blah. And I kind of go, what time is it? Where's my coffee?
I was going to say, yeah, it's like my wife, you know, let me have my coffee first. Don't hit me with all this stuff at once. I get that. But the news, the cycle of the news, everything's happening so quickly. But they're very astute observations. And I keep coming back, and I don't know why, Stan. I'm going to throw this out there. It's a non sequitur, I'm sure, but with what happened in Las Vegas, the shooting in Las Vegas, I for whatever reason, I just have this feeling that there is a, not just an Islamic or an ISIS connection, but a Saudi connection to that. I can't really put my finger on it, explain.
Well, you know that the Twin Towers, you know, the 9/11 thing, they did kind of redact heavily a lot of the pages the government had on the Saudi involvement in funding those terrorists that did 9/11. So, you know, if you're thinking that maybe the Saudis are involved in the Vegas thing, hey, that's not a stretch of my imagination. I agree.
Well, yeah, but to what end? And one of the did you happen to see there was a video snip of some guy being led through one of the casinos under armed guard?
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, now that the information I had, that was the Crown Prince bin Talal that was being led through that
yeah,
casino.
Yeah, it wasn't Mohammed bin Salman for sure, and I don't know about the other guy. In fact, I don't know if the video was actually taken from a Vegas casino. You just, these days, information is so easy to...
Exactly, and that's a problem I have. You look at these videos, and people send us videos and images all the time. How do you authenticate this? You can't, really, because of the... Unless you have the original with the metadata, and even then, you have to question the source. So, yeah. I don't know. Anyway, so, wow.
I know.
But good stuff. Good stuff.
I've been getting some emails from people saying, oh, look, did you see what this, the earthquake guy that sends out all the earthquake things everybody reads now then. Anyway, he was saying about the craton, the U.S. craton going to be causing or is causing these earthquakes to increase, etc.
Yep.
And Holly said, you ought to mention this because I mentioned it back in, I don't know, 2012 or so. I put it up on our show images page under the New Madrid fault line stuff, but you can click on image 55, that first image on the page, click on that and you'll see the map that I created on this particular day, whenever it was I made the map back then. I had placed the USGS threat zone map and some earthquakes for that week or whatever on top of the craton map I had, so that I could draw the red line showing where the craton or the hard, like, pillar, you know, support underneath the United States look at that image, you'll see I've drawn two red lines. One, the lower red line, is on the edge of the blue, the dark blue and light blue areas, and then westward. And all that west of that line is earthquake prone, and you can see it there in the earthquake map. That's where they happened, is west of that red line, which is on the border to the craton, you know, the foundation of the United States. And then you look at the top red line, and it shows you the outline of the craton and where the blue zones are that USGS has put, and they're very close to being the same thing. Now, this fellow, and again, I forget the name of him, it's very popular out there, but anyway, with earthquake reports and things, he's saying that, okay, the earthquakes are going to increase greatly next year because the Earth is slowing down. Yes, the Earth is slowing down, and according to my theory, hypothesis, shall I say, the Earth is going to slow down a lot quicker now than it's getting older and the sun is, you know, becoming unstable itself. It's been part of a phase state change, that this is going to put the brakes on the Earth due to excess solar wind on the hitting the Earth's field, and also the magnetic field protons that are coming in the solar wind, which hit our magnetic field and put the brakes on the core of the planet just a bit. Now, when you do that, it does weaken areas or cause them to trigger that are earthquake prone. And these red lines here, the safer zones are in the top red line and the dark blue and light blues up above it, and down in Texas, down into Florida, as far as earthquake. But there are other factors that are going to, you know, hit Texas all the way to Florida as far as flooding and storms that you'll see. So anyway, I thought I'd put this map up to show people where the craton is. The dark blue is more stable areas. The yellowish to red and very light kind of blue-green, you don't want to be in those areas. And, you know, surprise, surprise, that's where the USGS says these are earthquake-prone or seismic-prone areas. Right on these craton borders. So you can use that map if you're thinking about moving, and might help you figure out where to move to. We've even got it running through Colorado, eastern Colorado anyway there. And so west of that where we are is, you know, somewhat prone to earthquakes, but not big ones. It's the west coast. And that's enough on that. Now, slide 53.
Right.
Oil prices could double if Middle East conflict escalates. That's a very important heads up to people that are storing petroleum or gasoline or diesel or whatever. You might want to top off your supplies because the prices could very well go up if the conflict between Saudi Arabia and Iran and the various allies, you know, escalates, just like they say. This week, in fact, the Israelis have put their Iron Dome missile defense shield, mounted it on at least one seafaring warship they have in the Mediterranean to protect their gas fields out there in the Mediterranean from Hezbollah and other people trying to attack them with missiles to destroy their gas wells. So things are getting tense. Everybody's getting ready for an all-out missile-involved confrontation in the Middle East. And it's going to be hard, I think, you know, for people that are reading the news, like we are here, to really figure out who's a friend of who, even though they might say this country's a friend of that country or whatever, and deals are being made, it's all going to come down to when the fighting starts and the missiles fly, who's allied with who. And I wouldn't trust the Saudis, I wouldn't trust Iran, and I wouldn't trust a lot of the allies with Pakistan in the area. It's just a confusing nightmare. A nightmare over there. It's going to affect the whole world. So, you know, be advised to store your gasoline if you can to keep the prices down in a reasonable range.
I'm surprised that we have not had anything happen, you know, with the straits and the blockages there or any supply disruptions already, given the fact that it's so tumultuous over there.
Yeah, well, you've got Saudis on one side of the Gulf, and you got Iran on the other side, and in between is the Gulf, the Arab Gulf of what do they call it now, the Arabian Gulf now instead of the Persian Gulf.
Right.
You know, I've got some slides up there, four of them all going to the super solar energy valley in the Negev that they're building. It is a massive complex of mirrors that are in a circle, and these mirrors are all controlled by computer, and they focus all their reflections into a central point up on a tall tower in the middle of the field. If you look at image 52 and zoom that up, you will see the array of these mirrors incredibly done, so that they focus all their reflections in one spot to raise the temperature of liquid sodium or something like that, so that it can run turbines, heat turbines. This field you're looking at there, and you can see the size of buildings down the lower right side, how big it is. This solar power thing for Israel is a model for other countries to use, especially arid countries. And it will produce 300 megawatts, you know, three-tenths of a, well, what would it be, a gigawatt? Anyway, three-tenths of a billion watts of power. It's enough that they will run a lot of Israel without oil, without petroleum products. So it's something to have a look at there. You can see the other pictures at 49, 50, and 51 show you the size of the mirrors next to people and what they're done doing with it.
And they store that energy up as well, right? There's a storage feature there somehow?
Yeah. I think it might be in the sodium bath. I'm not sure. They might have deep well storage of the heat. The heat's the main thing to store the energy with. And they've got another project similar to this. I don't know where it is. It's been a while since they've shown a report of it. But it has a tower in the middle, and it has a bunch of glass laying horizontal to the ground on stakes or shelves that support it in a circle like this. But what happens is they've got a slope of those glass and that one going up toward the tower and up inside the tower. And what those do, they've got greens, you know, like living vegetation that's planted underneath all these clear glass things in the glass surrounding the other tower. And they produce moisture and warmth, you know, from the sun being trapped in them. And this forces moist air to go uphill under the glass, up inside that tower, and then to be condensed as fresh water. So they can irrigate those areas and get fresh water out of them because it, from the just the convection currents of the hot moist air coming off the crops they're growing, which means they can irrigate the crops with brack water. You know, not drinkable water, but out of it comes drinkable water, comes power from fans that are turned inside that tower from the rising hot moist air. So it's a win-win situation for that device as well. The Israelis are definitely just making huge advances in technology as far as energy and growing things. I'm very impressed with the stuff I read. Very impressed.
Wow. Just looking at those images, pretty phenomenal.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow.
On kind of a tangent here, I look at things in science and new developments in image 56. You can see this huge telescope, believe it or not, and you see here 13.26 million gallons of water in 300 tanks, all linked together in a pattern, and they're monitored inside with detectors to detect gamma ray penetrations from space, from different places. And this super-duper antenna is made of water. I just find it quite incredible because it lets them look at faraway, actions in stars and nebula and things like that, or anything that's producing the gamma ray stuff. And it lets them say, okay, where did it come from? How dense was it? Are we in danger, etc.? But anyway, you can click on the print underneath that, and it will take you to the article and see what they're doing with it to map the gamma ray sources around us. Because gamma rays really are not really the best thing for your health if they get through our, electromagnetic shield of our planet. So it is important to do that. But I just found it amusing that they're using tanks of water as antenna.
Well,
I think of next.
Now, where is this? We are looking at the picture. It's on your screen, folks. Where is this located?
It's in the mountains of Mexico. It's called the high altitude water Cherenkov detector, and Cherenkov was the Russian who discovered that gamma rays in nuclear reactors in the water coolant, gamma rays produce tachyons, which turn the water blue color. It glows blue. It's called Cherenkov radiation. So they've made a bunch of water tanks, 13-some-odd million gallons of them, to glow, in essence, when these gamma rays or tachyons from the gamma rays cause the water to glow. They're really trying to map where the gamma rays that are hitting us come from and, where the biggest threat is. But if we have a supernova somewhere 40, 50, 100 light years away, it may be already heading to Earth from there. And a massive enough, concentrated enough gamma ray burst would kill most life on the planet. So it's reasonably important that we figure out this and figure out if we need to do something about protecting from that, as well as asteroids and that kind of stuff. But anyway, it's in Mexico, and I don't know what the mountain is there. It might tell in the article, but it's, let's see. No, doesn't tell me there. But you can look up on the internet, HAWC Observatory, and it's in Sierra Negra.
Where it is. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, yeah, we're being threatened on all sides, aren't we?
Yeah. Huh.
The are we doing a break this thing? Or
no. Let's take it right through, Stan.
Okay. All right. I was passing. There's another threat, a 3-mile-wide asteroid that they've been, touting in the news, a near-Earth, life-destroying, extinction event, 3-mile-wide meteor. Our asteroid is passing close to Earth in December. And when you read the article, you'll see that this thing is passing way beyond the orbit of the moon. It's about 25 times the distance of the moon to the Earth from us now. And in 2093, when it comes back again, it will be 7.5 times the distance of the moon to us. Closer, but still no prize. What may be of interest is that there are satellite small chunks going with it that could possibly give us a bit of a thrill if they somehow or other get deviated over toward the Earth, but there's not a lot of chance of that. So I guess it's just the news writing exciting headlines saying, wow, near Earth, super asteroid, look out. I wouldn't worry about it if anybody out there has been worried about that report, because it's just news hype. And
so nothing to worry about.
Yeah, and it may affect its gravity, because it's 3 miles. I mean, compared to the moon, it's nothing, and it may cause a little vibration, if you wish, in the magnetic the gravitational field of the moon and the Earth at 25 times the distance, and at 7.5 times, it might be a little more shaking and quaking, but nothing that I would think would be anything to worry about. And that's it. That's going to be in, 70, 80 years from now, the next close approach. And in that time, we'll either have started the millennium and the Lord will take care of it, or, it won't be an event, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a relief. Good news there. Okay.
The thing with this peace treaty, I think I've got it down there in one of these articles. Oh, yeah, in slide 45, Saudis don't give a damn about Palestinians, want Israel's help with Iran. Okay, click on the picture or the text, and it'll take you to that article. And you'll see down about, 5 paragraphs down. I'll just read it to you and let it sink in about the Antichrist and signing covenants and things. But Saudi Arabia will face a public relations problem if it seeks closer ties with Israel. So it is ready to endorse any piece of paper, as a legitimate deal to claim that the Palestinian issue is resolved and it is time to move on, says the writer of the article. Now, does that sound like a covenant of some sort that needs to be endorsed by the Saudis? Isn't that? Doesn't that make the hair on the back of your neck stand up?
Yeah.
Whether it's the Saudis or Iran, I mean, this kind of talk in the Middle East is, you know, it is prophetic. It is right before our eyes.
Man.
Anyway, it's an article with some other factors in it to tell about that they're using the Palestinians and forgetting about them to get this peace treaty signed. There is some article, I think I put it up a few weeks back, that tells what the main tenets of the peace treaty that's being, or the peace covenant that's being drafted between Saudi Arabia, Israel, and the Palestinians and the neighboring Arab countries is, what the factors are in it. I don't know if I've still got that down at the other end of the page here. Okay. I'm going to look at slide 44. The Saudi Arabian king is going to step down and hand over the crown to his 32-year-old son. Okay.
Right.
Think about this now. Again, I'm putting him up as the possible Antichrist against Qasem Soleimani as the possible Antichrist of that region. Because so much of the activity and the predictions in Daniel about the Antichrist of this age revolve around Israel. Israel is the center. North of Israel, south of Israel, east of Israel, west of Israel. Israel is the center of the placement of these actions. So we see here that King Salman is going to step down and appoint his son Mohammed bin Salman as his successor. But it says that he's going to hold that role. King Salman is going to hold the role of titular, in other words, of king of Saudi Arabia, which would still mean that his son Mohammed bin Salman, even though he's got the reins of government and virtually all power, he's going to be a prince in charge of Arabia. And if he endorses that deal that's being drawn up now then with Israel, and the Palestinians will be involved, and with some of the neighboring Arab countries, if he endorses that, as that other article I showed you said, it's going to really make you think, well, somehow or another, that might be the guy. You know, I don't know if he moves his house north, you know, if he's going to be in that area, but he's not a natural-born Assyrian. His bloodline may be a Jewish bloodline, I think, and a trader, like a T-R-A-D-E-R, was the ancient, you know, progenitor of the Saud family. He was over in Basra, over near Iraq, and that might have just been part of the old Assyrian Empire, which would mean technically that the Salman family has an Assyrian bloodline. Certainly the name Salman comes from Shalmaneser, you know, the guy that built Asher and was the first of a lot of Shalmanesers, 1, 2, 3, and whatever, mentioned in the Bible. So he might move his house up there if he overthrows Iran, which is his intent. And if his camp is up there, you know, for some reason, Lord knows why, but if MBS has got his camp up in what is now Iran after that, then somebody pushing on him from the south might be people within his own country, Saudi Arabia or some of the other Arab states, that bond together to come after him. Again, that to me, that sounds like a stretch, but it's there anyway as a possibility.
Possibilities.
And we know that there's another thing in Daniel, I forget now, my mind's gone, but you remember where it says the Antichrist will pitch his luxurious tents in between the holy mountain of God and the sea? You remember that phrase, basically?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Prince bin Salman has announced in the last 3 weeks the building of $580 billion city called Neom, N-E-O-M, where? Between the Red Sea and the mountain of God in southern Jordan or southwestern Saudi Arabia, called Jabal el-Law. That's where we think the real Mount Sinai is. So he is putting right there a huge, luxurious town with all kinds of buildings and stuff, $580 billion worth. Now, I don't know how Qasem Soleimani would do that between the holy mountain and the sea, unless he did it somewhere in Israel between the Mediterranean and Jabal el-Laws in Saudi Arabia. If you find Jabal el-Laws and use that as the center of he's going to build it between there and the sea, there's only the Mediterranean across the land, kind of northwest of it, and the Red Sea, you know, south of it. So whoever is in control is going to pitch his prestigious, you know, his really luxurious tents, they call them, his dwellings, right there, somewhere in that region.
Yeah, I'm surprised how quickly all of this is taking place. We're seeing a number of potentials.
Yeah.
Engaged in a number of activities that have been prophesized. And any one could possibly take the role, I suppose.
You know, there's the first beast and the second beast that's spoken of there in Revelation 12:13. And the first beast is an antichrist. The second beast is what they call the false prophet who holds up the first beast who's been wounded or removed from power, however, holds him up as a hero to the world. Now that guy can be the Pope, it could be Erdogan of Turkey. I mean, you know, once we move down to number two slot, the second beast, he can be anywhere. And up in Europe. You see what I'm saying? So we have to separate those two in our mind. The Antichrist does certain things, the false prophet does others, and in our discussions, well, in general, in the Christian community, we kind of tend to meld those two actions into one Antichrist, but it's really two entities in two places.
I agree, and a lot of times, you know, I have to stop myself when I'm researching and looking at this. I certainly could see... Now I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, away from what we're talking about, but I can almost see the Vatican or the Pope fulfilling that role, given the acceptance and embracing of the Islamic doctrine. And now, again, that's kind of stretching it out to perhaps limits you don't want to get into, but just a thought of mine.
Well, you know. I have him listed on slide 13. He's my first thing there. It's possible Antichrist, but he's also possible false prophet, you know, the Antichrist cheering team. And next to him is Mohammed bin Salman, and next to that is Erdogan of Turkey. And then I've got Hussein Obama, which I think I'm going to take off because it just wastes its face. And then we've got Bashar al-Assad in Syria. Somehow I don't think with the complications politically that Assad has in the Middle East that he would be the guy, either one, false prophet or the Antichrist. But I am going to return, as I say, Qasem Soleimani in between Mohammed bin Salman and Erdogan on that list later this week when I get time. But it's slide 13. You kind of go back to it every now and then and see how I've updated. I'll put an update on the page when I've done it. The last update was June this year, 25 June, so... Things have, as you said just a while ago, they've moved so rapidly that it's time for a rehaul of the overview.
Yeah, it's amazing. Although I'm not sure I would take Obama out of the running on this so quickly, only because he hasn't gone away. What bothers me a lot is the fact that the shadow government, the permanent state. Now, I know that he's not the... The impetus or brains behind this. I know that he's being propped up. He likes to smoke his dope and take boat rides with celebrities, okay, and play video games. This has been well documented. However, he's got that charisma that people on the left progressives like. But I don't know. I don't know. What bothers me is he hasn't gone away.
He hasn't gone away, and maybe I'll leave him up there because there has been, you know, rumors that he may still take a position with the United Nations, and that would then allow him to, maybe to move to Europe as well and get out of New York area, so because that might be a problem in the future for military, tactical, and strategic purposes. But he could take a position on a global scale in leadership of a new world order based in, Switzerland or someplace like that.
That's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. I'll tell you what, I have never seen just the number of people and everything lining up the way it does right now with the prophetic implications of the headlines are just incredible right now, I think.
Yeah, and amazing. It's meant to confuse us. It's like the old CIA trick that if an article leaks out that they think, oh, gosh, that shouldn't have leaked out. What they do is they flood the press and the Internet and stuff with parallel articles on a similar note that lead you down rabbit holes and just diffuse the situation by swamping you with too many choices as to what the conspiracy is about or what the leak is about. And that's what we're seeing here. Satan is very crafty in that he's given us all these potential bad guys for us to leap on. And let's face it, people have been leaping on it since Israel became a nation again.
Yep.
Bible scholars have been saying, well, it's this guy, it's that guy, it's this one, it's that one. And, you know, we've now moved down to the wire here, very close. And we're flooded with all these guys. So everyone could be forgiven for thinking, whoa, who is it? But until the man of sin is revealed, the church will be here. But as Paul is saying to the Thessalonians, don't worry. Has the Antichrist been revealed yet? Well, no. Well, then you haven't missed the rapture. So what, it might be in the middle of the tribulation he's revealed or what. But until he's positively identified as the bad dude, we're all kind of required to read the news and fit the pieces together to fit all the pieces together that are about this guy to before we can say that's the one.
Right.
And I think the signing or the endorsing of that treaty with Israel and the Palestinians may be a very important signal.
And what role has Kushner, Donald Trump's team played in that specific to the treaty.
Or
hasn't he? I'm trying to separate fact from hyperbole here.
He's been the kind of ghost image of what President Trump wants in the Middle East area. It is no secret that President Trump wants to be the president who brings peace in the Middle East between the Arabs and Israel.
Right.
Now, just a little side note before I go into Kushner's role over there. Kushner represented his family holdings, his real estate properties. Now, he divested himself of one particular building in New York when President Trump won. And that building, I'm sure you know this, was located at 666 Fifth Avenue.
Yep.
You aware of that?
Oh, yes. Yep.
Okay. So it was a clever move to divest their family holdings of that building in light of the Christian base that supported President Trump getting into office that could not have a son-in-law with 666 Fifth Avenue as his address or one of his holdings. So anyway, he did that. But now, he's Jewish, and he's a very bright young man, and he's been sent over there a number of times to talk with Prince Mohammed bin Salman. They're good buddies, I mean personal friends. And with the Prime Minister Netanyahu. Now he's also been working deals with Egypt. Now here's where Egypt comes into this whole game, where Kushner is floating around over there. Egypt, 40-50 years ago, something like that, had a peace treaty between them and Israel regarding military occupation of the Sinai Peninsula and the Gaza Strip because of the recent attack on a mosque on Egyptian property over there. The Egyptians have wanted to move more troops into the Sinai Peninsula to fight the terrorists. So Israel and Egypt are talking about both putting troops in the area of the Sinai Peninsula to get rid of the remaining terrorists that are in the area, you know, trying to hit mosques or Christian churches or whatever they can find. Kushner is kind of brokering discussions between Egypt and Israel because it's very important for Egypt and Israel to agree on what they do with Palestine, or with the Palestinians calling themselves Palestine in the Gaza Strip, which used to be Egyptian property. So all this is being brokered behind the scenes, and I would tell you that even if you were behind the scenes listening on a bug in the rooms of the Saudi prince or the Egyptians or whatever, you'd still come away with your head going in circles because it's who's up, who's a friend of them or not, and will they honor the pledge? And all of this to make a peace, a treaty there, or a peace agreement, shall we say, in Israel with the Arab nations. And as you said, it just it's all coming together so quickly. It's like an avalanche, a huge snowball coming down to the wire here. And, you know, it's going to hit the fence and break apart, and we'll see what the truth is.
You know, I remember saying, I think it was, I'm not sure if it was a Hilton Hotel in New York City. I think it was in 1980 or 81 I stayed in New York City. Just as an aside, I remember from my window of the hotel, I kind of had to crank my neck a little bit to see it, but out the window was the bright lights of 666 from that building on Fifth Avenue.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That must have creeped you out.
Well, yeah, it did, as a matter of fact. But, of course, this is, 30-some years ago. I don't know. I should have taken pictures of that. It was, but it was just, yeah, it was kind of bizarre, to say the least. But, wow.
Okay. Now, listen, I know we're pressing time a bit here, but the slide 47. This is a leak that occurred that they think that they, Prophecy News has put it up, that it leaks the details of a Saudi-Israeli peace deal. Now, did you talk about this yet on the show?
No.
Okay. Here are the five principles of this peace deal with Jerusalem. They say the annexation of Jerusalem to international sovereignty as per the 1937 and 1947 partition plan, two international agreements which have recommended that the city not be annexed to either the Arab or Jewish entities. And so, in other words, one of the main parts of this peace treaty is that Jerusalem becomes an international object and not part of Israel, or any Arab countries or Palestinians as well. That's point one. Point two, Palestinian refugees, how to deal with them. Saudi Arabia affirms its aspirations to settle Palestinian refugees in their countries of residence. The kingdom can contribute to this effort by supporting innovative solutions such as canceling the Arab League's decision from the 1950s by which no Arab nation is to settle Palestinian refugees within their borders, as well as divert efforts to the redistribution and settlement of Palestinian refugees throughout the Arab state. And you can go read this on that slide 43, but the Saudi... how they're dealing with Iran in this treaty. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict is the longest-lasting conflict in the region over the years. It has served as justification for the actions of extremists and has also distracted the major players in the region from focusing on the central threat to its stability, Iran. In accordance with the deal, both Israel and Saudi Arabia must commit themselves to an effective cooperation to stop Iran. That's one of the four tenets of this agreement. The Saudi influence is one of those four or five things. Saudi Arabia's most effective and important role is to recruit others to support this peace deal, which will usher in a new era of peace and prosperity between Israel and the Arab and Muslim world. At first, normalization of relations with Israel will not enjoy wide public support throughout the Arab world. But Saudi Arabia believes that the combination of Israeli technology and the Gulf states' economic power and energy markets could bring out the Middle East's full potential and obtain peace, prosperity, and stability in the region. And in the last part, number five, American mediation and agreed-upon principles. The United States and Saudi Arabia will reach agreements regarding the main principles for ending the conflict, after which President Trump would summon the foreign ministers of the region to a summit in order to obtain their agreements, and only after all have agreed to the same basic principles would the actual negotiations for the peace deal begin. Now, that's a leaked document, but it does ring true with what we have seen going on in the press. Isn't that incredible?
Oh, boy. Buckle up. Yeah.
All right, and again, wow. Because I'm pressing time here, you and I talked before we went on the air about the progress with our EMP Shield business.
Yes, please. Let's. In fact, Eric just asked me about. Go ahead. Go.
Well, the problem, the delays have been that we had a few hundred people already order these. We had to figure out how many we should produce per week, or for future orders. And once we got the approval, the compliance agreement from Keystone Labs, Keystone Compliance, in Pittsburgh. They are the ones who do all the testing for the Department of Defense for EMP shields for the military use. We used their military spec, you know, and had them test all six of our units, the basic design, the same circuit, and try to make them fail so that we tell people how many times it would work. They have not been able to get our devices to fail at all. They are superb. They will stand several, maybe even up to 50 or 60 nuclear EMPs. Solar EMPs is not a problem. They'll take care of that without a flinch. So once we got that, which delayed us a bit waiting for that certification and the thing to put on the website to say we've got it, we put a copy of it up on our main EMP Shield website. It's called myempshield.com. Once we got that, then we could start hiring people. We've had to hire a new project manager for the factory, and we're hiring electronics people to come in and help test the units before they go out. And so today I was in a conference call for 2 hours with Tim, who invented it, and with the sales, the head of sales over there, or shipping rather, to work out getting the orders that we've already got out the door. And we've just acquired another factory space in addition to this, because we need more space so that we can produce maybe 10,000 units a week, because we can anticipate a lot of people are going to want this now that it's been approved like this. And hopefully we'll get some help from government or larger corporations to distribute these throughout the country, because even at 10,000 a week, if we made that many, I don't think we could help much of America in that time before, you know, the North Koreans or the Chinese or the Russians, somebody use EMP weapons over the country. So,
okay,
you know, that's where we are now. I know that we've had letters from people, emails saying, when do I get my order? Well, this week is when we're hoping to get everything taken care of and caught up there, now that we've got all these things in place.
Okay, and just to let people know, we're going to put a link on our website linking to the EMP Shield, and if you use a coupon or promo code Hagman, H-A-G-M-A-N-N, Stan, what will people who order
your
this?
Listeners, you know, can put that code in, and it will give them $50 off of every unit they buy, whether they buy one, two, three, or four, whatever.
Okay.
And, you know, as long as you wish to have that up there, we'll have that up there, and we'll give that discount to your customers.
Okay. Sounds good, and we really appreciate that. This is a wonderful product. I'm 100% in favor of this. We all should have one of these for our homes, businesses, and of course, on the screen there, you just click that link and learn all about that. So, Stan, that's fantastic. Thank you for the ability to, well, thank you for allowing us to promote this. We're out of time.
Okay, but, sorry about
thank
that.
You.
There was
oh, no.
to talk about.
No, this is fantastic. More on the EMP Shield. In fact, we'll just go to HagmanReport.com. It'll take you to the soon. It'll take you to the page. Stan, thanks so much. Thanks so much for being part of the program tonight. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on, and I hope Joe is in fighting form tomorrow and
oh, yeah.
back on the show.
He'll be back. All right. God bless.
Lord bless you now. Bye-bye.
All right. That'll do it for us tonight. That was Stan Deo, standeo.com. Wow. Is all I have to say about all of the news, information, and of course the EMP Shield, a great device. And we're lucky, we're fortunate enough to be able to put that on our website. Link there, use Hagman, H-A-G-M-A-N-N, as a promo code for $50 off. You can't beat that with a stick. Folks, be back tomorrow night with our flagship show. Of course, catch Doug Hagman Radio Show 9 to 10 Eastern, Global Star and BTR, as well as John and Joe Show 2 to 3. May God bless you. Stay safe. Until tomorrow.